go to the text line. No.
Always happy to be the first, my friend.
All right,
youngest producer. Youngest producer in the history of Hockey Day in Canada. First to do 2 days in a row on Sports 1440. I am happy.
Well, I had to have you on yesterday to talk about Bob Cole, and you did a brilliant job, and I thank you for that. And today I wanted to have you on because you, early on, like for some time, and it's not like you're vicious about it, but you have been a little bit worried about Stuart Skinner. He was always going to be a big story in this series, win or lose. But you have expressed concern going way back. If the Oilers lose tonight, or, you know, God forbid they go down 3-1, I don't know what would happen in this city. Do you see a scenario where Calvin Pickard starts a game in this series?
Oh, wow. That's a good question, and I haven't thought about it. I would say, I think that would be a very long shot, but I don't think it should be that long a shot, and I'll tell you why. Teams play differently in front of different goaltenders, and I think a way to get the Oilers to play differently, it's drastic if you needed it and required it. If you changed your goalie, I think you would get a different defensive mindset.
Interesting.
Yeah, that was a lot of thinking for me. There's some smoke in the room right now, but I like the way I thought that through. I think that's possible. You put Pickard in, you're going to get different defensive play and probably better defensive play, at least for that one game.
It does sort of shock the brain, right? Like when it works. It's like changing coaches when let's say they're down 3 Cobb, and then you bring in the other goaltender, and it's like, well, hell, man, we got to support this guy because, you know, we had left the other guy down. I always find hockey players to be the nicest group of athletes ever because they're always about, you know, team, and we let the guy down and the coach got fired and it's our fault. And I do think there's a rally around the troops kind of feel to changing the goalie out.
100%. And I'm not sure it's a terrible thing. I mean, in theory, we should play the same every night, no matter who's between the pipes. However, I do know, and I've seen it happen, where you can see a team elevate simply because they want to protect the guy who's in the net tonight. Maybe he doesn't get that many games. Maybe he's been on a bit of a struggle streak. Maybe it's his first game in the NHL. Maybe he's, you know, maybe he's towards the end of his career and we want to throw him a bone at the very end. I think there's a million different reasons, but you can see teams play differently in front of different guys. And you're right. It has to do with personalities. I mean, I got to be honest, I've never played hockey professionally, but I'm going to play a lot harder in front of a guy I like than in front of a guy I can't stand.
Yeah.
I can tell you that right now. And I just think that's human nature. So if you're in goal and you're struggling, I'm going to work a little harder for you, Al. It's just the way it is.
I think that, you know, like, I mean, this town is like, it's tinder dry and it's mid-August. Everything's ready to. I thought they were playing, you know, they played well enough to win. They took it to overtime. They didn't win. It's a 1-1 tie. The general feel or temperature of this city is they're down 3-0 in the series. And I push back against that because even though the loss was disappointing, it's a 1-1 series tie. And Chris Knobloch has been really good at rallying the troops after a disappointing outing. I suspect we're going to see a stronger effort defensively and overall tonight. Do you agree?
I sure hope so, because I'll be honest, and I think we've talked about this, I just think that's the key to the series. I'm not sure scoring for the Oilers means anything in this series. If they can keep it down to like 22 shots for the Kings every night, I guarantee you they win the series. But I look a bit at last year. I mean, you'd have to help me out. 2-2 after 4 games. I think the Kings had won their 2 games in overtime.
Mm-hmm.
And that, oh boy, that was going to be a close series. And the others just went boom, boom, and won the last 2 games, and that was the end of that. I liked a lot of things I saw about game 1. I didn't like 4 goals. I get it. 2 skates, Bouchard skate, Nurse's skate. I get it. I still don't like 4 goals. But I liked a lot of I didn't like a lot of things I saw in game 2. In fact, I didn't like hardly anything I saw in game 2, unless his name is Dylan Holloway. So I think there has to be some different thinking moving forward. But, and you mentioned Chris Knobloch, I like that he's the guy maybe helping that different thinking moving forward. And Paul Coffey, for sure.
Steve Lansky, our guest on the Lowdown with Low Tide on Sports 1440. I wrote on the blog today, Steve, about 1982. For me, it was a pivotal year for the Oilers. They'd beaten Montreal, and then they played in L.A., and in the next year, they played in L.A. in 82, and the Miracle on Manchester happened. And there was a lot of talk about, you know, what in the offseason Glenn Sather would do. I went back and I read the old archives of the Hockey News, and he was talking right away about Jaroslav Pozar, who was a big, imposing player and more defensive than offensive, and what they were going to do. And I think that was a turning point, because at some point, the shock to the system was, my God, we lost to L.A. in the first round, and we were supposed to win the Stanley Cup. And it took two more years for them to win it, but they started being more devoted and more focused on playing 200-foot hockey. And, you know, Glenn Sather did offload some players between 82 and 84 to make it a more complete hockey team. I don't know that this, and I'm not trying to compare, because they're different eras and obviously different qualities of team, but I do wonder whether, even though we're this late into the Connor McDavid era, whether the focus on defense and the attention to detail is what it should be.
I think it is not what it should be. And I think a big part of a coach's job is to be a teacher, not an X's and O's teacher, but a psychological teacher. Now, Glenn Sather had a perfect scenario in that he had players who were ready to be psychologically taught. Now, when you lose to L.A. in five games and they have the Miracle on Manchester and Darrell Evans is skating down the ice, which I think if I ever saw Darrell Evans in person, I'd probably punch him. Harboring, Al. Still harboring. But I think that's your job. And Glenn knew he had to teach these guys psychologically. Yeah, they won the Cup 2 years later. They were in the Stanley Cup final the next year. Now, they got plowed by the Islanders, but still, again, you're learning a great deal by being in the Stanley Cup final. You're looking around the room, hey, guys, we're in the Stanley Cup final. You know, we didn't do everything we could do, you know, and then they see the Islanders all battered and bruised as they walk by the room in the famous story. They learn again psychologically. You have to, you know, I can't say to you, Al, you have to be more focused. You have to learn psychologically. That doesn't mean anything to you. I have to be able to teach you how to do that. So basically, I think what you're asking is this team still teachable? I think they are, based on what I saw when Chris Knobloch took over. Are they teachable to the point where they can make the change on an every single day, three most important words I said, every single day basis? I'm not sure. And I think that's where the problem continues to lie.
All I want to know from that 82 series is, what was Gary Unger thinking?
I love Dungy, but, you know, listen, without that series, there aren't five cups. That's how I look at it. That's the only way, right? Without them beating Guy Lafleur and the Montreal Canadiens at the end of their great run, there aren't five cups. Everything happens for a reason. Otherwise, I just want to punch Darrell Evans. So I have to let some of that stuff go and just assume the world unfolded as it should.
Do you think, I want to ask you this because I think it is important, just on a personal level, though, not hockey level. The game starts at 8 o'clock tonight, our time, right?
8:30.
Okay. So when you were out in Toronto, did you game plan to stay up that late, or did you just know you were going to fall asleep in the comfy chair?
What are you kidding? Did I game plan? I was a producer for 45 years. I ate at structured times. I napped at structured times. Of course, you already know the answer to this. Of course I game plan. You don't fall asleep in the Lazy Boy in the third period. What kind of a fan is that? Of course I game plan. And then I also game planned that when I looked at myself in the mirror the next morning, I tried not to think, oh my God, you look dead. I tried to get past that. But I'm telling you, man, that 2017 is the one that almost killed me, because it was you got to help me. First it was San Jose, then yep. It was Anaheim.
Yeah, it was Detroit, San Jose, Anaheim, I think.
Anyway, all I know is there were games that were ending at 1:30, 1:45.
Yeah.
That is That is not a structured plan for success. It just is not. And some of those days, I had to be up at like 7 o'clock the next morning, ready to go, ready to do something functional. It's not a sustainable model. I can tell you that right now. So I am at this moment, I am in heaven that this thing starts at 8:30. That's the greatest thing in the history of the world for me.
It's funny because when you're young, it doesn't matter. Like when you're 20 and you're up till 2 a.m. But I remember in 06 when they scored and I was so mad and I went to bed and Detroit did. And I didn't know that the puck had gone underneath the net and not into the net legally. And so I'm tossing and turning and I'm stirring. And my wife's like, "What? Why are you so upset?" I'm like, the Oilers lost, damn it all. And the next day, she brings me the paper and she goes, "You liar." And Hemsky had scored an over. I didn't see any of it. And I was so mad at myself, Steve.
And so there's a perfect example. So what did we learn? We never go to bed in a fit of, "Oh my God, click, turn off the TV and go to bed." No, you have to let the whole drama play out. You have to absorb it all. And you know, it's funny, you're saying that and I'm thinking, if sports isn't the greatest thing in the world, I don't know what the hell is. Because what else can drive us to these manic up and down emotions and excitement and talking about things that, you know, to many, many people, it don't matter at all. But to us, it's like life and death every day.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
And if you said to me, "I'm taking sports away from you," you might as well take everything away. To me, it's everything.
It's true. And it also connects us. Like if I say Blue Monday, nobody who is knows me, they know exactly what I'm talking about, right? Like exactly.
You know what? I work with Steve Rogers, and I never had the guts to ask him about that, but I probably should have.
I asked.
He gave up that ball to Rick Monday, right?
Yeah, he did. He was. I asked Dick Williams about it. I met him in Arizona, and I asked him about that pitch, and he said that Gary Carter had told him that he wanted it middle, like in, not middle in, and right. Rogers threw it. He just missed, like he missed the pitch, and you know what are you going to do, right? Like, but I mean, it ruined my life, Steve.
You know what? And what other parts of life do you remember this one? What would it take from Rogers to wind up till that ball's over the fence? Maybe 8 seconds?
Yes.
7 seconds? What other parts of life? It's 7 seconds, and we think about it for the rest of our lives.
Yeah.
That's the beauty and the crazy of sports in one big pile.
It is. And by the same token, I remember my friend Lauren Starko and I, when Dave Lumley split the heart of the net in 1984, and it meant that Patty LaFontaine could score as many goals as he wanted, but he was never going to beat the Oilers in that game. We cried, we hugged like we were idiots, but it was the best thing ever.
I can still feel my feeling that night because you and I talked about it in the studio about a month ago. I can still feel the feeling when the Oilers won that game, and it was like something just opened in my chest and I felt like my chest was going to explode. It was so full of excitement and I was working, so I kind of had to keep it in, but I can remember that feeling now, and it's going to be 40 years in about 3 weeks.
Yeah. Truly amazing. And you're right about sports. And so tonight, I mean, we're just in the first round of the playoffs, but it's the same build, right? Like it's the same feeling. Like, you know, the Edmonton Oilers should be going deep. They should be winning the Stanley Cup. And if they're not, then the story behind it is what we'll remember, good or bad, heartbreak or wonderful release of whatever. It will be a story we remember for all time.
And that's the hard part about it. I would way rather be cheering for a team that, you know, in 2006, weren't the Oilers 8 and Detroit was number 1, I think, in the West?
Mm-hmm.
I would way rather be cheering for that team because anything you got is a bonus. Rather than going in, and I remember when the Oilers, you know, 85, 87, 88, 86 even, what a series that was, with Calgary, when you expected them to win and they didn't, that to me was just sledgehammer to my entire body and my psyche. Like, how is this happening? How are we having to endure this? And this is kind of that situation now. To me, I feel like they should be able to beat the LA Kings quite easily.
Yeah.
And it is very difficult to watch sometimes.
That's why my two favorite moments in Oiler history are Glenn Anderson scoring in Game 7 late in 87 because it meant everything. And then the other thing was in 87 when Wayne Gretzky passed the cup to Steve Smith, it meant everything. And if you endured 86, then you know why 87 was so special.
And you know, it's funny. I know there are people who are listening now that are like, oh my God, can you guys stop talking about the 1980s? No, it's not possible, because we were in those formative years when it just meant everything to us. And we had the good fortune. There's no way to sugarcoat it. I don't care about the Montreal Canadiens in the 50s. I don't care about the Islanders in the 80s. We watched the best team in the history of the National Hockey League. And for you would expect us not to remember the minutia moments of that. If you expect that, you don't understand sports and you don't understand hockey.
1987 team is the best team I ever saw.
You know what? I'd have to sit down and make notes. For me, I loved 84, because 84 was a team that really, are they going to beat these Islanders? Son of a gun, they are. And that will always have a huge place in my heart.
How tight was your sphincter when LaFontaine scored that second goal?
Nothing. It was nothing. I knew they were going to win. There was no way. there was no way the Islanders were going to win. And I that makes me smile so hard. I knew there was no way they were going to win that series.
Love it.
I'm so happy we were right.
Love it. All right. Thank you, my friend. Be good. Stay out of trouble.
All right. You too. Take care, Al.
All right. Steve Lansky. Some nice reminiscing there. We talked about Stuart Skinner and the pressure that's on him. I'm a Skinner guy. I think Skinner is going to do well. I believe in him. Sometimes it doesn't happen in year one. Sometimes it doesn't even happen in year two. But I think he's got the calm feet. And I think that the Edmonton Oilers will win this series and they'll go on to great things. I don't know how great. I don't know how long. But I don't think this series will trip them up, he said. On the way, Mark Spector, live. We're going to check out. He's down in Los Angeles. He's looking at the Hollywood sign. We're going to find out about the lines, the pairings, the thought processes, what the coach is thinking. And game number three, a huge one in L.A. We'll talk to Spec next. This is the Lowdown with Low Tide on Sports 1440. It's the Lowdown on Sports 1440 for Wolf GMC Buick. Truck Month continues in April. Visit wolfgmcbuick.com. We play that song because that's Speck's big high school song when he was going to high school. And the report brought to you from Los Angeles by Ewell. Ewell has a brand new e-commerce website. Don't sit on the bench. Get your account today at ewell.ca and win that project. EWEL.ca, ewell.ca. Speck, how are you, man?
Pretty good, Low Tide. What's going on down there?
What was the big hit when you were in high school? I know it wasn't Your Daddy Don't Know because you're not that old, but what was it?
I once went to a party where a guy stood in the living room with a turntable and played Back in Black, that album that came out from AC/DC.
Yep.
He played it the entire evening. The rule at this particular party was that no other song shall play except for the 10 songs on that record or whatever there was. And he played it for 5 hours, man.
Well, you know, you only need three chords and some guy who can yell walking around in shorts, man. That's it. Man.
Yeah, a lot of Pink Floyd, a lot of Rush, you know.
There you go.
All that stuff, man. Life was good back then. Huh?
It was indeed. The music was fabulous. All right, so you're in Los Angeles. It looks like the coach, Knobloch has been a really good coach at having his team recover after a difficult game. That was a tough game because they got it to overtime, but there were some loose play, the goaltending under a little bit of pressure. What do you expect to see, Mark, tonight from this Edmonton Oilers team?
A much tighter defensive team. The buzz around this team down here in Los Angeles is we got to get back to being that team that gives up way less chances, that's much harder to score on. I think what we've seen with Skinner over the course of this season is when the team in front of him is good, he's excellent. There have been some nights where he's carried not a great team for a couple periods till they get on their feet. But generally speaking, certainly like we go back to the playoffs last year and to game two of this season, When the team in front of him hasn't been good, I'm not looking at a guy who's carrying his team. He's not standing on his head and winning games by himself, but he's every bit as much goalie as you need when the team's good defensively, and that's where they're trying to get back to after giving up, what, eight regulation goals in the last two games.
Yeah, I think that's all fair, and I agree with you. It needs to be tighter. And I felt like L.A. had – either they were really lucky or they were doing great on the set plays. Either or, you've got to be better in coverage and you've got to haul ass. And I also have to give credit for Drew Doughty. That goal he scored, he came from 200 feet to get it done, and he was 20 again. And what a hockey player and what a hockey play that was.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, the Oilers can't get caught up in lucky goals. Like, there are some score effects in the first game and some stupid goals they kicked in their own net. However, in game two, L.A. had by far their – well, not by far, but they had their share of the play. They led that game all the way. They scored goals. They made good – you know, they had opportunities and they seized them. They weren't all fluke goals. You know, so the Oilers can't sit back and say, it's been bad breaks. Even though they've had a bunch of bad breaks, they got to look at the bad breakdowns, not the bad breaks. Remember, when this team was sick, you know, they went through that 16-game win streak, and even around it when they were playing good hockey, they're giving up two goals a night.
Yeah.
You know, one goal's on a lot of nights, and that's the team that's going to win. You're not going through all these playoffs here in 5-4 hockey games, pal. That's just not how it's going to work.
Mark Spector, our guest on Sports 1440 in the Lowdown with Low Tide. You know, it's such a cliche to say score first, and I'll add score first and then play the next shift like it matters. But I do think that Los Angeles, not necessarily that they're doing 1-2-1, they seem to be, changing up from time to time, but they are a team that they've got some great two-way players. If you go down a goal, it's going to be tough.
Yeah, listen, like, you know, you're right. You can't build your whole game plan around scoring first, because what if you don't, right? Now what, do we quit? We can't quit. So, you know, of course you want to score first. But the big thing with L.A. is the minute you get ahead of them and they feel like they got to chase the game on you, it really does take them out of a preferred structure, right? We know how they want to play, and I think these last two games have been a good example I saw a lot more 1-3-1 in game two when they had what were they up, 2-0 and 3-1, than we did in game one when they were trailing. And the Oilers have different ways to push them out of that thing. And it starts with moving the puck up quickly enough they can't get set up. And that's where it starts for Edmonton. If they do that and the Kings can't get set up, then it turns into goals for you. Now you got the lead we're talking about, and you take it from there.
One question, and I'm looking forward to finding out the answer, but in previous series against LA recently, McDavid kind of kicks it into another gear and wins the day, and you know, they win game 5 and 6 and it's all over. But I want to know, does this version of the Oilers, in your opinion, need that from McDavid, or do you think that more than one line or more than one pairing can get it done, that maybe the depth of this team is a little better this year?
Yeah, this is the best Oilers team of the last 3 years. Would you not agree with that, Alex?
Oh, yeah. No, I agree. Yep.
Yeah, they're the deepest team. I mean, and now look at your fourth line here. You got a fourth line that, you know, you're sitting out Derek Ryan, who used to play all the time. You know, you got Evander Kane on your third line on this team now, because Fogle's taking a step into the top six. So their depth is better, and they don't need, you know, they'll certainly accept Connor McDavid taking over a game and winning it for them, but they've got a lot more bullets in their chamber here now than just 29-97, that's for sure.
I see a lot of people talking, like, online about, you know, Kane, move him down. I think they need Evander Kane to play a feature role. He's a physical player. He is intimidating. He's got a hell of a shot. I don't think they can just hang. I know Holloway's playing well, but, you know, in the minutes that he's getting, he scored twice the other night. I think you've got to have Kane on one of the top three lines. Fair?
Yeah, I think, you know, certainly the lines of practice this morning were the same lines you saw in game one, game two. And it's the same over in L.A. They practiced in El Segundo. I did not see them, but their lines are the same. Talbot's going to start. So it's really, you know, we're looking at the same lineups. I come from the school that says if Evander Kane's on my third line, I got a pretty good hockey team. Right? You know, there's a lot of teams in this league where Evander Kane would be a top six player for sure. And if you, you know, if he's your third best left winger, and I'm not pushing Evander Kane to my fourth line. I don't think that's, you know, this guy's a veteran player. Like, he's not getting pushed into a fourth line by as good as much as we like Holloway's game and as awesome as he's looking in this, you know, promising as he's looking here now. And this is great news for the Oilers to have a good young player like Holloway. He's done it for 5 minutes here. You know, Evander Kane's done it for 10 years. So, you know, Chikai a little bit on Holloway walking in the door and taking everyone's job. Listen, the kid's doing great in the fourth line right now. This is the best he's ever looked. He's comfortable. The ice time seems to suit his eye. Like, to me, don't force feed him more. Let him have some really good experience here in what he's doing. It's working for him. He's comfortable with it. Why are we going to force feed this kid more now? And we're just going to keep giving him more until he fails? Is that the plan or what? Like, just stay away from the kid, man. He's simmering great. Just leave him alone.
Yeah, it's also true, and you would be the best person to talk about this because you've been around the team for so long and you've seen various incarnations. But I remember when Ethan Morrow played on the fourth line for Pat Quinn, and you can't lose a veteran, right? And you know, people can say, well, you know, suck it up, Buttercup. But, you know, Evander Kane wants to win a Stanley Cup. This is one of his final bullets in his career. He wants to be a part of that. He's obviously playing through some things. I think, you go back 2 years and Matthew Tkachuk, you know, he shot his mouth off and then he shut up and they lost in Calgary. I think that Evander Kane had a big part of that. That's the player you have in Evander Kane, and you want everybody pulling on the rope. And I do think, you know, a trip to the fourth line for him is probably something that is difficult to take. And if Holloway takes the job away, then that's fine. Or if he's injured, then he has to rest. That's fine. But I think that there's a lot in Evander Kane that can help this team, and you don't want to lose him. Fair?
Oh, for sure. And, you know, every player is different, right? And, yeah, I doubt Evander Kane would take a demotion to the fourth line well. But more so, he's playing well. Like, he's playing good. You know, I don't mind the way he's playing. He's figuring out how to play a bit of a cycle and possession game on Perry's line, because Perry's line isn't going to fly up and down the ice all the time. You know, we were only two games in. Like, it's not, right? He's played just fine. If he was terrible and you demoted him and you could look him in the eye and say, look, pal, you're just not getting the job done. That's one thing. But I don't mind the way he's played. I don't see why we're demoting a guy that's playing pretty well. Does he have 5 goals yet? Folks, we've only played 2 games. Like, chill out, right? We've only played 2 games here. So give him a little time and, you know, he'll find his watermark. If he's producing, he'll stay up. If all of a sudden we're 4 games into the second round, he's not producing, let's have this conversation again.
Mark Spector, our guest on Sports 1440. The final area I want to talk to you about is, it's pretty clear to me already that the Kings are focused on making Evan Bouchard do a lot of work. And defensively, I mean, he's a wonderful passer and he's got all kinds of skills with the puck on his stick. But the first goal the other night, he sends an area pass to Fogle where he could have carried it out or taken a little better care. And I'm not being overly critical, but he is going to be a focal point for Los Angeles. And when we talked at the top of the segment about tightening up, that's what we're talking about, right? Like, take care of the puck when you have it, and when you don't have it, you've got to really hurry back, make a play, even if you're going to get hit, even if you're going to get crunched, it has to go to a good area.
Yeah, and I don't think we've seen Bouchard get exploited in the situation that you just described, Al, where he's retrieving a puck and they're banging on him and he's making panic plays. Like, he had all day on that goal you just described. He just made the wrong pass, and probably it was a miscommunication with Fogle of some description, but, you know, that wasn't a play made under duress by any means. He just made the wrong, he made a mistake. And the other play, remember when Kempe was tipping that puck twice and behind Skinner, there was a defenseman right next to him who was not tying up any sticks there. And that was Bouchard as well. You know, Bouchard, that was a great play by Kempe, but Bouchard was next to him and he's juggling a puck on the end of his blade and there's nothing happening to Kempe. So listen, Bouchard's an 80-point defenseman. There's no secrets around the National Hockey League what you do when you play against him. You force him and you make him play defense. You make him defend. That is his, you know, not his strong suit. I'm here to tell you that the place where he needs to improve steadily is defending, and everybody on every team knows it. So you know, he's got lots of ice time, which means lots of time for the King to dump it in his corner and make him defend. if the Oilers are going to win, this kid's going to have to defend at his best and maybe even get a little bit better at that.
So, final one for you, Speck. I know where the Kings play, and I remember back in the olden days, I used to produce for John Short when he's doing post game shows at the Forum, and
that's
he used
a long
to
when, time ago.
Yeah, it was when he used to. He'd say to me, he'd say, "Kid, we're at the Forum. The last cab is waiting for me, so we're going to wrap this show up in 5 minutes." And that meant that meant we weren't going to 11; we were going to 10:35 because he never wanted to be the last guy out of the LA Forum. Little different situation for Kings fans where they are now.
Yeah, I remember coming out of that LA Forum a few times, and you're right. You know, there was some rinks back then. Cavs didn't even want to. Once the people were gone, the Cavs wouldn't come in for one sports writer. The old Spectrum was one. The old Chicago Stadium. You got caught there, man. You're, I don't know how we got home some nights from there. This one's right downtown, like our rink in Edmonton. It's surrounded by people. LA Live is very safe and open and lit. And I'm staying in a hotel across the street. I don't rent a car or anything. So, yeah, it's, you know, for folks who want to come down and see the Oilers play down here, it's a really cool setup, to be honest. LA is a good place to watch hockey now. That old Forum was in a, what was it in? Was it in Inglewood?
Yeah, it was Inglewood, but it was in a, like, not a great area.
No, it wasn't. And I believe they built that SoFi Park right out there now, too, right? Yeah. I believe the new football stadium's there. So LA's cleaning up. These cities aren't, you know, I remember Detroit scaring the hell out of me when I first went there a few times. Now it's not so bad. So, you know what? We're doing okay. No one's getting mugged this trip, low tide, I don't think.
Good. All right. Thanks, man. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. There you go. Mark Spector. With an interesting update. There's a lot of interesting takes on that. I feel the same way as he does about Kane. I think he's a guy who can help. And I think you have to play. You have to have him engaged. You don't want, you know, he wants to be a part of the team. I know I get a lot of texts all the time about Dylan Holloway. Coaching staffs are really risk averse with young players. What I love about the fourth line is, and I wrote about this after game two, which is was the game in which he scored two goals. Holloway was playing quite a bit. Like that fourth line at 5-on-5, they were right there. They were playing. And for me, that's really important, because if you're not going to play Holloway on the top three lines, and that's fair because, you know, you've got veterans involved and the fourth line is kicking ass like they are, then you play them. And if the fourth line passes the third line in minutes, that's a whole different thing. And maybe we see that, because it was with, I think it was Carrick and Janmark. And Holloway's got a nice release. I always wondered about him offensively. I'm pretty interested in what he's been doing here, and I hope he can sustain it. Because I'll tell you, you go back to Dean McCammon, in what year was that? 97. You go back over Oilers history, and sometimes during a playoff run, a young player will make a big impression, and that will sustain itself through the summer and into the fall, and that player will end up having an NHL career. Or, you know, unless the Oilers trade him like they did with Martin Jelena. But the point is, Holloway's got an opportunity here, and he took full advantage of it from the fourth line. And that's something to keep in mind. 136 on the way. We want to talk about the NFL draft. We got into it a little bit about the weird quarterback selections later on in the top 10 and early in the top 15. Next up, we want to talk about the Bills, the Cowboys, the Eagles, and more. And we'll do that next. Lowdown with Low Tide on Sports 1440. It's the Lowdown on Sports 1440. For Wolf GMC Buick, Truck Month continues in April. WolfGMCBuick.com. Well, or like what Speck said, expect a tighter group, more defensively aware. You don't have Bernie Perrant and Dominic Hasek in goal. You have a very good goaltender. That's the ticket. It's like Declan can be brilliant, but if I don't show up, which happens a lot, then it's a little different show.
Do I start to falter a little bit?
Well, it's just that, you know, sometimes you don't get pucks out, but it's not your fault because I'm not paying attention.
Yeah.
You know, you got to get pucks deep. You got to get pucks out.
Yep.
You usually do a good job of that. But if I'm not paying attention, then it turns over and it's in the net.
Chip and chase.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do?
One day, I'm going to write a hockey play, and it's going to be based on all the things Ryan Smith said into a microphone.
Oh, like a play.
Yeah.
Like a like an artistic theater endeavor. I thought you were talking, like when I was a kid, I used to have my little notepad and I would draw up football and basketball plays. I thought that's what you were talking about. Like you were going to draw like a play off an offensive zone face off or something.
Yeah, that's not what I was
talking about. Where yours is a lot more creative.
Well,
you're a lot more left-brained, I guess.
Well, I'm something. Okay, Jays, we've got it this weekend on Saturday 107, Sunday 11:37. Shohei Ohtani and the LA Dodgers. They had a tough time against the Nationals in Washington, D.C. this week. Ohtani went 0 for 4, struck out 3 times. I have him on my fantasy team, so I follow this closely now. I want to talk NFL. Are you ready to talk NFL?
Yeah, let's do it.
I don't understand the draft. There's a couple things. We talked about the quarterback. You've explained that to me. People went a little bit, and that's why we had Knicks go and Atlanta do what they did.
Yep.
Could you explain the Buffalo Bills?
Right. So the easy answer is no. Like, I just don't get it. And I'll say this. Buffalo is a team, for one, who has been your biggest rival in the past 4 years?
I thought it was KC.
By a wide margin. So you have allowed your arch rival, I won't say arch rivals because they're not the same division, but you have allowed the team that has crushed you consistently to move up and get the speediest wide receiver in the draft.
Which you need.
And I'm going to get to that. Yes, the speediest wide receiver in the draft, who is presumably going to work his way into becoming a number one target for Patrick Mahomes. When your wide receiver room looks like Curtis Samuel and Khalil Shakir as your 1 and 2 receivers. Like, you are beyond depleted at that wide receiver position. You had that guy right there. Now, to their credit, they'll still probably get Adonai Mitchell out of Texas with that 33rd overall pick. But you could have got Xavier Worthy. Ricky Pearsall went as well from Florida. I didn't think he was as good as either of those guys. Xavier Leggett went as well out of South Carolina. I didn't think he was as good as those guys, but you could have gotten Xavier Worthy there. You could have got your guy there. Instead, you trade and you give your arch rivals a positional need and a guy who may come back to haunt you in the playoffs, because we've seen that year in and year out. So now they did the entire pick swap. I forget the numbers. They ended up getting like 95, 220, and they lost like 141 and 200 or something like that. It was a whole deal. But the Bills had one position they desperately needed. They had an opportunity to address that, and instead they traded with their arch rivals.
Do you think there's a, like, because I'm an Eagles fan, and there was a time.
You guys did great.
I'm very pleased. But there was a time when Howie Roseman lost his, like, role. Even though he's the GM, they said, no, we want it was the Oregon coach, whatever his name was. They said, you're going to be the
Chip
GM.
Chip Kelly.
Right, but Chip Kelly's going to make the decisions on drafting. Of course, it was a disaster. But they went back to Howie, and he ended up getting the Super Bowl roster together. So I have complete faith in Howie Roseman as an Eagles fan. I totally do.
I like him a lot. I think he's done a great job building that team.
So why doesn't Buffalo have that guy? Like, I'm not tying Roseman, but why don't they have, like, remember in Baltimore when they had the tight end who did it all the time and all the drafting?
Yep.
You got to have a guy. And now
we got Bean there who's making the calls.
Like, Ozzie was great.
Yep.
What the hell, man?
I don't know where the logic lies. And I've often said, you know, there are brighter minds than me working the phones, and there are brighter minds than me in the draft rooms. But anyone with two eyes, actually, I'm going to take that back. Anyone with one eye and a pulse could have seen that this was maybe the most glaring need any team in the draft needed outside of the top three picks. Like, seriously, outside of Washington, who just traded Sam Howell, outside of, you know, New England, who just traded Mac Jones, and outside of Chicago, who just traded Justin Fields, there was maybe not a more of a glaring need for a position than wide receiver. Now, one thing that has been thrown out, and I actually just saw a couple texts here come in, and I'm glad they came in, and I want to address it. San Francisco had talked about moving either Brandon Ayuk or Deebo Samuel in some way, shape, or form. The question is, are the Bills interested? Are they going to go after one of these guys? I like the idea of giving Josh Allen a proven receiver rather than
somebody's got to break
down project. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. But you could have pulled off that trade anyway in some way, shape, or form, right? Mm-hmm. You could have, like, Brandon Ayuk and Deebo Samuel were probably not getting traded for a late first round pick anyway, right? No. Would have been a package of later picks in the draft, maybe next year, etc. So you could have still used that first round pick and gotten a Xavier Worthy. You could have traded up and gotten a Brian Thomas Jr. and still worked a deal for one of those two guys. So do I think that's where it's headed? Yes, now more than ever, because we didn't draft anybody.
Right.
And I would be happy with either of those two because they're proven commodities. And I think Brandon Ayuk had a phenomenal year last year. I think he would absolutely excel with Josh Allen.
So you want?
But why did it have to be one or the other?
Right.
I think there was room there for both. And that's why I scratch my head.
So you want what? Like when the Eagles got, when they drafted Devontae Smith, they got A.J. Brown. And you want, like, you want the young and you want the old, you want the vet, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And that's not even me wanting my cake and wanting to, what is it? Have my cake and eat it too?
Mm-hmm.
That's not even having my cake and eating it as well. That was more than possible. That was more than doable. And we haven't got there now.
I want my cake and eat it too, was it a guy walks into a bar?
I don't know. It was one of those things.
Okay.
And this is the thing. Like, the Bills have the 33rd pick. They may get Adonai Mitchell out of Texas, and he's a good receiver, but I don't think he's as good a receiver as some of the guys you could have gotten with that initial selection. Now, granted, it's only 5 picks behind. I get that. It may not end up being a huge difference. And sometimes the draft is revisionist history. He may go on to be the best receiver in the draft, right? Like, we don't know. Sometimes it just works out like that.
Yeah.
So it's possible. There are things like that. But I just don't. I wonder why there are so many things that go into it. You could have paired the two. You could have paired this vet coming in with a young up-and-comer and had him guide him and hand him the keys to the franchise. Or not franchise, but keys to the receiving core in years to come. Instead, you have made your arch rival, I would say, objectively better.
Yeah.
And we got a text in here. So now Ayuk can lose to the Chiefs 2 weeks early in the AFC Championship instead of the Super Bowl. Yeah, exactly. Like, that's what's going to happen. So I don't know what it's looking like for the Bills. Also, like, this is another thing. I haven't even touched on this. The Bills let Jordan Poirier and Tre'Davious White go in that secondary, two staples of that secondary. Like, Quinyon Mitchell went way later than expected.
I love it. Is he going to play with, like, opposite Slay? Would that be it? Or are they going to replace?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, he went way later than expected. I think Terrion Arnold went way later than expected. Excuse me, I'm rambling here.
Well,
Kool-Aid McKinstry is still on the board. Cooper DeJean, who for months and months was thought of as being a first-round pick, was still on the board. Like, there are still guys there who are still on the board. Mike Sandstrill out of Michigan, granted, he's not as good. But there are still guys on the board who could have been taken to help that secondary. So there were positional needs that needed to be addressed that weren't by Buffalo. It is what it is. I'm interested to see what they do with the 33rd pick. But I do think they are now leaning into bringing in one of those guys who were mentioned out of San Francisco.
Okay. Well, I think we covered because it's like, and the thing about the NFL draft is that, like, I know round one is big and I know the quarterbacks are big, but this is where the rubber hits the road. Like, this is where I'm an Eagles fan, so they need to replace. I know they've got somebody in place for Kelce, but they need a center and they need to replace Fletcher Cox. Brandon Graham's a year older. They're old. I'm looking for the first round pick is great. I love it. And it did address a need, and that's what you want in the draft. It's not like the NHL draft where you have to wait 2 years. These are plug and play guys, right?
A lot of people thought he was better than Quinyon Mitchell. And like I said on Fantasy Friends, I might have said it on this show. I only watched one game of Quinyon Mitchell last year. It was the MAC championship versus Miami, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
He played out of Toledo, small MAC school.
Right.
He was good. He was good. Like, I've seen highlights of him, of course. I've read the draft breakdowns. He was good, but, like, watching Terrion Arnold week in, week out playing against SEC offenses, granted it's a run-based conference, like, he was far and away the better corner to me. So if I were you, I'd be very excited. Yes, I think he can definitely come in and be a day one starter.
Love it. Love it! Okay. Feeling good now. I don't know a thing about football, but when Declan makes me feel good about my team, then I love football. That's all I really know until the CFL draft. And then I will totally. Are we going to do everybody loved our mock NFL draft. Do you think we should do a mock CFL draft?
Oh, absolutely.
I'd do it.
I'd do it in a heartbeat.
Would you?
Yeah. Well, if you wanted me to.
Well, we'd just do one round, which is like three players.
Yeah, exactly. Just 9 picks. We'd be done in 5 minutes.
That's a great thing about the CFL draft. Yeah, so it's, you know, but it's one thing about the CFL draft, it has changed. It used to be just all O-linemen from Marwane, and now it's actual, you know, there's skill, not that O-line. All linemen are the smartest people on the football field. But there's some high-skill tight ends, running backs, receivers. The kid that was a Manitoba Bison who plays for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers has been there for a while. Dembski. They've got skill guys in the CFL draft. So look forward to that. Maybe we'll do that just as a lark. All right. So are we done? Did we do everything we were supposed to?
I mean, we got another minute here to waffle if you want to get anything off your chest.
I thought about reading poetry. What's your favorite lyric of all time?
My favorite lyric
or one
of
that
all
has
time.
Just occurred. I'll tell you one that I was driving down the road today and it hit me. I think it goes, she gave her name was Caroline, daughter of a miner. Her ways were free, and it seemed to me that sunshine walked beside her. And I love that line. I just love it. And it's a sad song.
That's pretty good.
But it's very good. What about
mine
you?
Is maybe, I got 99 out of 100 marks on my English test. If I did it again, I'd get the same because I still don't know the definition of resting. It's by Dave, who's a British rapper. Might be mine.
That's awesome. I thought it was going to be something silly. That's brilliant.
He's a poet, man.
Well, you know what? Let's do this again next Friday.
Yes, sir.
Friday favorite lyric.
I like that. Wait, so it's just like, okay, I like that. Let's do it.
Man, that was we got a new segment. This show writes itself. Okay, on the way, Jason Greger. He'll tee up the LA Kings v. Edmonton Oilers tonight. Partey, it doesn't start till like whatever it is, 8:30. Low Tide's got to go take some pills to stay awake. Run around the block a time or two. Let the dog lick my face. It's going to be quite the time. Thanks so much for tuning in. Please enjoy your weekend. Enjoy the game and be safe.
This is a Sports 1440 update.
And for your Sports 1440 update, brought to you by your Alberta GMC dealers. Get up to $6,500 cash purchase credit on a 2024 Sierra 1500 Denali Ultimate during Truck Month. See more at gmcoffers.ca. Game day for the Edmonton Oilers. Down in LA as they take on the Kings in Game 3 of their first round matchup. Puck drop for that one at 8:30. No lineup changes as of now, and it will be Stuart Skinner in the starter's net for the Oilers. Three other games in the NHL today. Rangers in Washington to take on the Capitals. They lead that series 2-0. Canucks in Nashville to take on the Predators, where they're deadlocked 1-1. And the Jets and Avalanche at 8 p.m. in Colorado. That series tied at one game apiece. Just three games in the NBA today. It all gets going with the Milwaukee Bucks in Indiana to take on the Pacers. They will be without Giannis for the third straight game this playoffs. That series currently sits at 1-1. Clippers and Mavs following at 6 out of Dallas. That series tied at one game apiece. And the late game, the Timberwolves in Phoenix to take on the Suns. Minnesota currently up 2-0 in that one. MLB action. Earlier today, it was the Royals knocking off the Tigers 8-0, and later today, plenty of games on the schedule. We'll see the Athletics and the Orioles just after 5, as we will the Cubs and Red Sox, Cardinals and Mets, and Nationals in Miami to take on the Marlins, and of course, the Toronto Blue Jays in action at home against Shohei Ohtani and the LA Dodgers. First pitch for that one just after 5 p.m. News around the NHL is William Nylander nears a return for the game Saturday, according to sources. And in the NFL, the NFL is now allowing Guardian caps to be worn during the regular season for the upcoming 2024 season. And lastly, two games in the WHL playoffs tonight as Moose Jaw is in Saskatoon for game one of their series. Puck drop for that one at 7 p.m. our time, and at 8 p.m. our time, Portland and Prince George out of Prince George in game one of that semifinal series as well. That's going to do it for us. I am Declan Kruger on behalf of Low Tide. Up next, it's the Jason Greger Show with Connor Halley. This has been a Sports 1440 update.